All right, an extraordinary scene is playing out in a Michigan courtroom this week. Scores of women are confronting the man who abused them. He's Larry Nassar, a former doctor for the U.S. Olympic gymnastics team. He's pleaded guilty to sexually assaulting patients. Many of the women were girls when the abuse happened. And now, as Kate Wells of Michigan Radio reports, they are taking control of their own stories. And just to warn you here, over the next few minutes, you could hear some language that disturbs you.
Larry Nassar sits in the witness stand, wearing a blue jail jumpsuit and orange Crocs. He looks thin and shrunken after months behind bars. The judge placed him so he is forced to look at the more than 100 women and girls who one after another say he abused them. Many of them are like Jennifer Rude Bedford, athletes who went to Dr. Nassar's sports medicine clinic at Michigan State University. But the treatments she received there were not medical.
I remember laying there wondering, is this okay? This doesn't seem right. Should I say something? What's happening? I didn't know what to do.
Nassar was seen as a miracle worker. His walls were plastered with pictures of his patients on the Olympic gymnastics team. Rude Bedford's teammates told her he was a little touchy. But in reality, he was inappropriately touching their genitals without wearing gloves or getting consent. Laying on that table, Rude Bedford told herself, it must be okay.
He's a world-renowned doctor who's treated so many athletes. Everyone knows he treats down there and they don't complain, so just stop being a baby.
Nassar often performed this procedure with parents in the room. He'd position his body or a towel so they couldn't see. Christy Lemke-Akeo was a neighbor of Nassar's, and their families were close. Her daughter, Lindsay, is a gymnast and saw Nassar for treatment starting at age 9.
We have many sleepless nights over the guilt we feel for missing this. It truly has been gut-wrenching and will be embedded in our minds forever.
Another mom, Donna Markham, says before her daughter Chelsea was abused, she was this fun kid who loved gymnastics and going to the movies.
I hate to admit it, but on a rainy day, we went to see 4 movies and only paid for one.
But after the abuse, Markham says, Chelsea changed.
For my daughter, it just became a serious, serious bout of depression. And so in 2009, she took her own life.
Several of these women and girls initially wanted to remain anonymous. But after seeing so many others come forward, they did too. Gwen Anderson is a middle school teacher who says at first she did not want to go public with her story.
Because I was scared that my students would see me at my weakest moment. They would see me as a victim. But I've come to realize that this is my moment of strength. And that standing here today, facing the man who molested me as a child, is my time.
And Amanda Thomashow told Larry Nassar that now she is ready to go from being a victim to a survivor.
And Larry, the thing you didn't realize while you were sexually assaulting me and all of these young girls and breaking our lives is that you were also building an army of survivors who would ultimately expose you for what you truly are, a sexual predator.
Nassar is expected to be sentenced tomorrow, but already the judge has assured these women Larry Nassar will die behind bars. For NPR News, I'm Kate Wells in Lansing.
After days of often raw and painful testimony from his many victims, Larry Nassar, the former doctor to the U.S. Olympic gymnastics team, is expected to be sentenced today for sexual assault. As Kate Wells of Michigan Radio reports, the shockwaves from this case are now reaching some of gymnastics' most powerful leaders. And just a warning, you might find some of this story disturbing.
So far, some 150 women and girls have come forward in court to share how they were abused by Larry Nassar.
Larry, you were the only one I trusted. In the end, you turned out to be the scariest monster of all.
This is Maddie Larson. She's a former national champion, and she, like so many others, says Nassar was able to thrive in an environment where he was the nice guy. In a world of screaming coaches and relentless pressure, Nassar listened to these girls, snuck them junk food, made them feel special. The first time Larson met Nasser was at the USA Gymnastics National Team Training Center in Huntsville, Texas. It is famously known as the Caroli Ranch, named for coaches Marta and Bella Caroli.
There's an eerie feeling as soon as you step foot onto the Caroli Ranch. It is completely removed from all civilization, and that's no mistake.
At places like the ranch, Nasser had unlimited access to young girls who had been taught to work hard and never question authority. Larson says the first time Nasser abused her, she thought him touching her genitals must be part of treating her pelvis injury.
Almost each and every time I received treatment from Larry, from that moment on, he would molest me.
Isabel Hutchins was an elite gymnast at a Michigan gym run by a former Olympic coach. She remembers when she injured her leg, Nasser told her she was fine, and her coach made her keep practicing for another month until she was eventually rushed to the ER. The x-ray there showed a broken leg.
It looked like an axe splitting a piece of wood. And we believed the child molesting doctor over the child who was the one experiencing the pain.
Larson, the national champion, says eventually she tried to injure herself so she would not have to go back to the National Training Center where Dr. Nasser was working.
I was taking a bath when I decided to push the bath mat aside, get on the floor, and bang the back of my head against the tub hard enough to get a bump so it seemed like I slipped. My parents immediately took me to the hospital because they thought I had a concussion.
Several of these women accuse USA Gymnastics, the sport's governing body, of being slow to respond to reports of abuse. But this week, they're being heard. Three of USAG's board leaders stepped down. Former Olympic coach John Gettert was suspended Monday. Sponsors like Procter & Gamble, Under Armour, and AT&T are pulling their support. Larson, the former national champion, says this is all coming after some 150 women and girls poured out their hearts about decades of abuse.
It's never too little too late. I mean, no, I take that back. There's things that are too late sometimes, but, you know, it's happening now, and that's great.
For his part, Nasser is expected to be sentenced later today for sexual abuse. He's already facing 60 years in prison for child pornography possession. For NPR News, I'm Kate Wells in Lansing.
My monster is finally gone. That's what one survivor said in court today as Larry Nasser, the former Olympic gymnastics doctor, was sentenced to 40 to 175 years in prison. He was convicted of sexually abusing patients under the guise of giving them medical treatment. And the sentencing today caps an extraordinary week. More than 150 women and girls came forward to share brutal stories about abuse by a man they trusted and about the institutions that failed to protect them. Michigan Radio's Kate Wells has been in the courtroom, and she joins us now. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Elsa.
It sounded like a pretty remarkable final day in court. Have you been able to talk to any of the survivors? How have they been reacting?
Yeah, there was a huge reaction when that sentence came down. There was a giant standing ovation in the courtroom, a lot of embraces, a lot of crying, joy, shock, relief. I mean, it is still really sinking in for the women that I've talked to and for their families that after this living hell that they have been going through, they have finally confronted this man who abused them and they have been heard and believed at last. And you mentioned that we heard from 150 women, more than 150 women. Yeah. You know, we started this out last week thinking that we were going to hear from about 80 women. But
wow.
Every single day, more women and girls were contacting the prosecutor's office and saying, you know what, I didn't want to come public before, but I'm hearing these women and I do now. That's how we got to 150.
And the judge, Rosemary Aquilina, she's been allowing for everyone to be heard. Can you tell us a little bit about how she ran her courtroom during this extremely long sentencing hearing?
Yeah, well, like you said, she cleared 7 days of her docket and let each and every single one of these women and girls come forward on their own time and confront Larry Nasser. And she really responded personally to each and every single person who got up there, telling them how powerful they were. With Rachel Denhollander, the woman who was the first to come publicly forward about Nasser, Judge Aquilina told her, "You are the bravest woman I've ever had in my courtroom."
Well, we also heard from Larry Nasser himself. He spoke before he was sentenced today. Let's take a listen to a little bit of that.
"An acceptable apology to all of you is impossible to write and convey. I will carry your words with me for the rest of my days."
That is actually the first direct apology any of the victims ever received from him. How did they respond to that piece of what happened today?
While Nasser's apologizing, it was pretty emotional. You heard women just break into these open sobbing. But then as soon as he finished, Judge Aquilina said, you know what, I don't believe you. I'm going to read a letter that you sent the court before this hearing about how you are totally innocent. You have been forced into this plea deal. Nasser's letter even used the phrase, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned.
Wow.
That got audible gasps from the courtroom, and Aquilina says this letter is what she took into consideration in part when she handed down this sentence of 40 to 175 years.
I just find your death warrant. I find that you don't get it, that you're a danger. You remain a danger.
I mean, these women have been trying to be heard for something like 20 years, right? I can't imagine what it was like today to process finally being heard. Did anyone speak
Rachel,
about that?
Yeah. Sorry, Rachel Denhollander said it best when she spoke at the end. She was the first to come forward, the last to address Nasser. And she said, this is what it looks like when adults don't believe children, when institutions fail them.
This is what it looks like when people in authority refuse to listen, put friendships in front of the truth, fail to create or enforce proper policy, and fail to hold enablers accountable.
Wow, sounds like a really remarkable final day in court. Thank you so much. That's Michigan Radio's Kate Wells.
Thanks, Elsa.
Wednesday was a day of judgment for Larry Nasser. A judge sentenced the former USA Gymnastics doctor to up to 175 years in prison. She said, you've done nothing to deserve to walk outside of prison again. The judge allowed statements by many of Nasser's more than 150 victims, any who wanted to speak. Wednesday was also a day of accountability for the president of Michigan State University, where Nasser also worked. President Lou Anna Simon resigned. Michigan radio reporter Kate Wells has been covering this story for more than a year. She's on the line. Good morning.
Hey, Steve.
Can you work us through the timeline here? When did victims start reporting crimes by Larry Nasser, so far as you know?
More than 20 years ago, according to these women and girls. We know that multiple women and girls say they have been talking to their MSU coaches, trainers, staff. We heard from one of them in court this week, Larissa Boyce. She says she told her MSU gymnastics coach that Nasser's so-called treatments were becoming sexual. This was back in 1997.
I told somebody. I told an adult, instead of being protected, I was humiliated, I was in trouble, and brainwashed into believing that I was the problem.
And we know that from an administrative standpoint, this school launched a 2014 Title IX investigation against Nasser, but that investigation ended up clearing Nasser at the time and letting him go back to work, even as a separate MSU police investigation against Nasser continued for more than a year. And we know that Nasser assaulted more than a dozen girls during that time.
Okay, so Lou Anna Simon was not university president when these reports began coming in, but was university president from 2004 onward. When, so far as you know, did she learn how bad this was?
During, at least we know that she heard about the 2014 investigation, and she says she told the school to play it straight. But the anger towards her has really been building over this last year and a half. She has been seen as kind of tone deaf on this. At one point, she told victims that it would have been impossible to stop a determined sexual predator like Nasser. In her resignation letter last night, even, she said, as tragedies are politicized, blame is inevitable. As president, it is only natural that I am the focus of this anger. So victims feel like they're not really feeling, even now, accountability from MSU.
Wait a minute. She's not saying I'm responsible for what happened and I have to take ultimate responsibility because I'm the top person. She's saying I just want to avoid a political fight.
She's certainly saying, you know, I'm really sorry to victims that this happened, but no, nothing in terms of, look, we could have done this better and we really messed this up.
Does Michigan State University face further investigation?
Definitely. MSU is now under open investigations by the NCAA, the state attorney general, and they're facing more than 100 civil lawsuits in court.
Kate, thanks very much.
Thanks, Steve.
Kate Wells of Michigan Radio.
As former Olympic gymnastics doctor Larry Nasser sits in a cell in a high-security federal prison in Arizona, parents of his victims are struggling to understand how he won their trust so completely. In some cases, Nassar abused children under the guise of treatment while their parents were in the room. As Michigan Radio's Kate Wells reports, now those parents want others to learn from this case.
At first, Deb McCall could not understand how parents missed this. How could they have sat in on their kids' appointments with Nassar and not known that under the towel he placed over his patients, or that when he turned his back to block parents' view, he was touching them sexually?
It was unimaginable and hard for me to understand when I first heard it. Like, how could you have that happen and not know? Until I found out it happened and I didn't know.
McCall's daughter, Morgan, is 18. She saw Nassar several times for treatment. And at first, when the accusations against Nassar started trickling out, McCall thought her daughter had been spared. Then when Morgan told her that she, too, had been abused, McCall realized that she had been sitting just a few feet away, chatting with Larry Nassar the whole time.
I wasn't somebody who was, like, nose in my phone or in a magazine or a book. Whenever Larry was doing something that I knew was in that area, I would get up and go stand by the table.
It's not the parents' fault. These were loving parents, and they are victims, too.
That is Adrienne Simeone. She is speaking on Skype. She heads up the Mama Bear Effect. It's a group that teaches kids and adults how to prevent sexual abuse. She says it's easy to blame the parents of Nassar's victims because that lets us feel like this could never happen to our kid. But statistically, most abusers are not strangers driving around in windowless vans. They are people that we trust. And Simeone says we have to be vulnerable and honest with our own kids about that.
And just allowing our children to know that even we ourselves, we are not infallible. We can make mistakes. We could very well trust the wrong people, but that no matter what, our child comes first.
Forensic psychologist Carla Van Dam has spent years studying and interviewing the kind of predator she calls the socially skilled child molester.
They target the adults in order to gain access to the children.
Much like Nassar, they have great credentials and reputations in the community. But Van Dam says they test what they can get away with, and they do it by breaking small rules. For instance, Nassar didn't wear gloves during his treatments. He didn't always have a chaperone when treating kids. But when his employer, Michigan State University, first found out, he was not fired.
That's clearly a violation, and it should have been spelled out, and that should have been the end of it. If you don't tolerate minor transgressions at all, you make the world unsafe for sex offenders.
Parents of Nassar's victims logically know that this was not their fault. They know even parents who were in law enforcement or doctors also sat in on those appointments and were fooled. But for Deb McCall, knowing this is one thing, forgiving herself is another.
I'm the mom who made my kids wear bicycle helmets even when they were just riding in the grass. So for this to happen on my watch just feels like, man, I really, really messed up, you know?
And that is what McCall wants other parents to understand, that predators are skilled at getting our trust to access our kids. For NPR News, I'm Kate Wells.
There are new developments today connected to the Larry Nassar scandal. He was the Olympic gymnastics doctor who's now in prison for abusing women and girls under the guise of medical treatment. Now Nassar's former boss, William Strample, has been arrested. He was dean of the College of Osteopathic Medicine at Michigan State University, where Nassar worked for years. State prosecutors are charging Strample with willful neglect of duty for failing to protect patients and with sexual misconduct of his own. Michigan Radio's Kate Wells has been covering the story and joins us now. Hi, Kate.
Hey, Ari.
What exactly are prosecutors saying Strample did?
So they're saying today that Strample is facing four charges here total. First is a felony for misconduct of a public official. The second is for sexual misconduct, like you mentioned. And then the last two are for willful neglect of duty. Those last two charges are the ones that are directly related to Larry Nassar. They go back to 2014. That was when the school got a complaint that Nassar had sexually assaulted a graduate student. And prosecutors are claiming that Strample let Nassar come back to work and treat patients before that investigation was even over. And that when the investigation officially wrapped up, Strample was supposed to make sure that Nassar followed protocols like having a chaperone present and using gloves, getting patient consent, but that Strample just never did that. And then unrelated to Nassar are the sexual misconduct charges. There are four female medical students who say they were worried about their grades and Strample used that to sexually harass them, to tell them that they should put out, that they should come to his house to perform favors. One woman says Strample literally said to her, "I hold your entire future in my hand and I can do whatever I want with it." To make that affidavit even more interesting reading, police say that when they searched Strample's computer recently, they found 50 images of nude women. And prosecutors say that those appear to be selfies taken by MSU students. Prosecutors are also saying that they found on Strample's computer a video of Larry Nassar, they say, quote, performing a treatment on a young female patient. They haven't given us any more detail about that, like what kind of treatment that was.
Have Strample and his lawyers responded to these charges?
Yeah, Strample was arraigned today, and through his lawyer, he is denying any wrongdoing. About that specific video of Nassar, Strample's attorney is saying, look, this may have been the video of Nassar that Nassar sent out to a lot of people when he was claiming that what he does was just medical techniques, that they were not sexual.
This is most likely the video that Mr. Nassar used around the country to show his technique in treating many patients. We do not know the context of what the government is alleging of my client's possession of that.
And what's the university saying?
The university says, look, these allegations are serious. They're not in alignment with our values. But they say that, look, the crimes of one doctor and the conduct of this dean don't represent the school as a whole.
That's Kate Wells of Michigan Radio. Thank you very much, Kate.
Thanks, Ari.